Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retall.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 comics sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we're going to be talking about in this episode are the top 300 comics as sold through Diamond to retailers for December 2009. And once again, Marvel is just at the top of the breakdown of the top 300 comics, Bob. It's got 52.62%. And I think we're kind of both in agreement that while that's great for Marvel, that probably just not so great for the industry in general. I don't think it's good for any one vendor to be, you know, dominating the sales that much.
Yeah, they're coming in and doing some crushing. And, you know, I was thinking when I was reading the online solicits for February.
For
Marvel. I mean, I can see what they're doing again. I mean, they're flooding the market with one-shots, with miniseries, with, you know, like Sieges allegedly ending, but they're putting out, you know, six or seven different, you know, Siege one-shots to wrap it up. And, boy, I don't know, because last time they did this for Civil War, you know, you end up with that Wasp issue that they don't give you solicit info on until, you know, it's past final order cutoff, and then you get, like, this really short story and a big reprint, you know. And they're just, like, doing kind of a slash and burn, it seems like.
Well, and you look at how the top 300 breaks down in terms of number of items. And it's funny, because on the trade side, by sales, it's usually kind of a three-way split, Marvel, DC, everyone else. But very different in terms of quantity of count of items. But on the comic side, on the count of items, it's almost a three-way split, roughly a third Marvel, a third DC, a third everyone else. But then you look at the percentage of sales, and it's just wildly different. You know, you've got Marvel and DC, Marvel having a total of 111 of the top 300 items, DC having 85. That's 196, so roughly two-thirds, yet they're accounting for almost 84.38% to be exact, of the total unit sales, and then 84.26% of the dollars for those top 300 sales. And, you know, if everyone else is coming out with roughly a third of what's on the list in terms of number of items and getting maybe 15% every month, you know, it again, that shows that dichotomy of the different levels that publishers are playing at. Marvel and DC are just operating at a higher level than what I would consider the mid-tier, you know, the kind of that minor league, and certainly above the farm teams.
I found it interesting on the total dollars, though, because if you look at it, you know, Marvel with close to $12.1 million, then DC with about $6.8 million, so not exactly, but about half.
Yeah,
and then when you look at everybody else, they're 3.5. So again, not exactly, but about half. So you're having a, you know, 50, you know, a big drop between Marvel and DC on total dollars, and then you take everybody else combined. If they were the third one, they'd be making about half of what DC makes.
Yeah, I mean, again, with Marvel having over half the sales, and they had 53.78 by dollars, and that's compared to DC's 30.48 by dollars and 31.76 by units. So DC had almost a third of the top 300 sales. But yeah, it's just kind of, again, that doubling effect almost. So I think it'd be better for the industry if sales were, if there was more competition, more viable competition, I guess, and a more even split across publishers. Now, granted, I don't expect that to suddenly start happening. You know, I would like to see DC doing a little bit better. That's not to say I want to see Marvel do any worse. Ideally, everyone else would raise to this level, not Marvel would sink to everyone else. I just want to be clear on that. But one of the things I put together, if you look down at rows 70 and below, is at the recommendation of 80s Junkie. He was curious how this kind of worked out on like an average item level for each publisher. And what it comes down to is if you take these total units and total dollars and average them out, your average Marvel item on the list is doing 29,892 units and bringing in $108,947.25, which kind of works out to the average price, the weighted average price, I should say, for their comics being $3.64. Whereas DC's weighted average price is $3.42, bringing in 23,560 units and $80,629.86. And then some of these other publishers, like Image, you know, their average title, 11,479 units, bringing in $36,769.96. So that kind of gives a little bit of a, you know, again, an average. And it's interesting statistics. I still haven't decided how useful it is, just because, particularly with Marvel and DC, there's such a huge difference between their stuff at the top of the list and the bottom of the list. And these averages are including reorder items, which I'm not sure if I really should be or not on that.
So another interesting thing, how many comic shops are there? You know, what's the current wisdom on how many comic shops there are in the country? I mean, it used to be like 3,000.
When Diamond sends out their information, they say they've got 4,000 accounts. That's not to say every account orders every month or that every account is what we would consider a comic book store. Some of these could be gaming stores that are ordering a handful of comics, you know, the Warhammer stuff, whatever.
That makes it even worse.
Yes.
But let's say 3,000.
Well, hang on. Also, one account could service an entire chain of stores. But I think 3,000 is a good estimate for what we would commonly consider an actual comic book store. If you walk into it, you would say, yeah, this is a real comic store. So
here's why I'm going with this, okay? And that is, and then this is just a rough average, but if I add up all the total dollars you've got here, you know, right, you got about $22.5 million sold. Mm-hmm. In the month. You divide that by 3,000, and you only get $7,500 at retail. So, again, broad generalization, but if you take this as, you know, each store is selling $7,500, and that's obviously not true because, you know, some of the big chain stores, you know, Midtown Comics are going to sell way more than that. You know, DCBS, I'm sure, sells way more than that in a given month, you know, based on what I buy alone, just on average, if a store is only selling that much on retail and, you know, generously, if their margin's about, you know, 25-30% of that, you know, that means an average store is only pulling in maybe $2,500 a month. That's...
Well,
you could be working at, you know, a fast food place to make that kind of money.
But figure there's at least another $5.25 million total coming in on the trade side this month. Plus, there's, you know, back, there's whatever else they have in stock.
Right. I was saying, but, you know, that stuff, well and true.
Toys,
but I think that
magazines.
Kind of like average out with, you know, like the big shops and stuff. So, my point is like your average local comic shop, I don't see how those guys are staying in business. And, you know, which in many cases they aren't, you know, seeing all these shops closing, you know, and moving to the mega chains and stuff. It's like, you know, the economics of anything else. You got like Target and Walmart pretty much, you know, everywhere. And, you know, used to have all other kind of stores and they're all gone.
That's why I worry if the business model ever shifts towards trades. Because right now, the local comic shops are really good at getting us our monthly or weekly or quarterly issues, however often they come out and stuff. And they're kind of the best venue for that. And I include DCBS or other online places in this category, whether they're brick and mortar or online, but a comic shop is the best way to get those. Trade paperbacks, hardcovers? These guys are now having to compete with Amazon, Borders, Barnes & Noble, and other huge companies that have invested a lot more infrastructure in moving those kinds of items.
Plus, you don't have the every Wednesday flow of cash. It's like people wander in to buy, you know, like trades. They can wander in any time if they're just a trade customer. I can't imagine someone who is, you know, reads stuff in trades goes to a shop every week to buy their books. And if they, in fact, didn't pick up monthly books, why would they go to a comic shop to buy their trades anyway? Because you can get them way cheaper online from Amazon or even from Borders with a coupon or something like that.
You know what would be interesting to do, Bob? Both of us buy a ton of comics, okay? Mainly for me, at least, and I'm pretty sure for you, in the monthly format. We're only a few weeks into the year. It'd be easy enough to go back to, like, the Graham Cracker site and track what trades were released. And track, if we had bought everything in trade, how would that cash flow work for, you know, be it through DCBS or whatever. You know what I mean? Because everything I'm getting, I mean, there's only going to be a handful of trades I would get. I'm willing to bet that whatever I would have gotten the last couple of weeks, again, had I bought the same content, but instead of in the monthly format, in the trade format, or hardcover, what have you, I think it would have been a lot less income in terms of a cash flow basis for wherever I would have done that through.
Yeah, but I think your core point there is true, that as the readers, if the readers shift away from monthly comics, comic stores as a breed are going to go out of business in a wholesale fashion.
Yeah, well, and I think for both reasons, both because yeah. You get less income per customer or it's spread out more due to the release of the trades, and two, those customers can find those things cheaper elsewhere. So I know that the customer base, the readership is always, not always, but over the last decade or so, been doing the quote-unquote waiting for the trade. And you know, I credit people like Augie DeBleek on the Pipeline podcast and other people for kind of popularizing that mantra and mentality. And I certainly don't fault any reader for saying, hey, I'm going to wait for the trade. If that's the right decision for you, you should do so. I just think it potentially could be disastrous for the publishers because they're not ready for it. I think it could be disastrous for the retailers, comic retailers, because it'll be hard for them to compete there. Is that a reader's concern? Certainly not, but there will be ramifications to this. And I'm just thinking it would be interesting to go back through and see how our purchasing would track had we made that shift.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to knock any individual person, but I mean, I can see, and I used to do it when I'd go to the comic shop too. I mean, I would buy, you know, the odd trade here and there from my shop because I'm going to the shop every Wednesday anyway. Mm-hmm. If I only bought trades, there is no way I would buy them from a comic shop.
Well, and I agree with that, but I'm saying
it would be stupid to buy trades from a comic shop if they're the only thing you're buying.
Even if you did, though, just at a retail price point, regardless of what price you could get them at, how would that compare to how much money you've spent?
Right.
You know.
On a weekly basis, yeah. You're right.
Yeah. How does that affect cash flow?
The other thing is there, you know, especially in the indie realm, I mean, there's a lot of things there that don't hit trade, or, you know, it's going to be 2 years and, you know, before a trade comes out.
Yeah.
You know, or you might never, it's just like, would I have bothered to get a trade of Gigantic if I had been waiting for the trade? You know, maybe,
well,
maybe not.
I think the numbers indicate the answer is most likely not. Not necessarily for you in particular, but as a generalization, you know, there seems to be, the trades just don't measure up.
And there are other things that, you know, I might like an issue here or there of, but I certainly don't necessarily want an entire trade worth of it. And even when you come down to Marvel, you know, when they're putting out all these three-issue series, I might like three-issue series number one, not three-issue series number two. And when they put out that three-issue series as a trade, they're going to stick something else in there. You know, they'll maybe throw in some reprint material that I already have. You know, it starts, well, I'm not a typical buyer, so I can't
make that direct comparison. No, but to a certain degree, both of us to a degree, are almost best case buyers in terms of the amount of money a publisher and retailer can suck out of somebody. You know, and I mean that in kind of a good way.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think the economics kind of breaks down in a couple of different ways, but the other factor is barrier to entry. It's no big deal for me to say, hey, you know, I'm gonna try the first issue of this series. If I like it, I'll keep going. If I don't, I won't. It's really hard to do that, or it's not as inexpensive to do that on a trade basis.
That's $18 or something.
Yep. Which is, again, why we're seeing a lot of first trades, first volumes and stuff, at such cheap price points, you know, $10 price point for five issues or what have you. It's just smart business.
But then what do you get on a drop-off on the second one where people are like, oh, well, this was $10. I liked it for $10, but I don't like it for $20.
Usually you do, yeah.
You have to have a really strong first trade.
Well, in a first trade that tells a complete story, so they felt they got their money was worth and enough to get them into the second trade, it's a little bit of a different kettle of fish than the comics, but you know, in some cases very similar. The difference is on a monthly comic, they don't expect that first issue to necessarily complete a story. But it's one where it's harder to track the volume-to-volume drop-offs on the trade just because of the time differential between and comparing how much that first trade has racked up since it was first released to the initial release, month of release for the second issue or volume, I mean, that sort of thing. But it's one that I think, given the proliferation of trades, the popularization of trades, and I mean trades both in softcover and hardcover, just as an encompassing term here, that it's an increasing factor to be aware of, and I think a lot of stores are getting to where, hey, I don't think I can sell this mid-list title in trade, so I'm not going to pick it up at all. In other words, a lot of trades are falling well below that kind of 3,000 mark of what we're saying would be the number of comic stores out there, theoretically. But it's interesting just how much Marvel is dominating. Again, that's great for Marvel, but particularly since they were just bought out by Disney, you know, we got a new set of rules that may come down on Marvel, and the way they operate may change. It may not. It may stay the way it is. Everything could be fine and great or get better. But we're in a serious potential for major changes at both Marvel and DC. Again, Marvel because of the Disney buyout, DC because of kind of that shift to DC Entertainment. Paul Levitz stepping down as the main guy there. And we'll see how that goes. And I think the industry would be better off. That risk would be mitigated better if there was a better diversity or a better split across the publishers in terms of sales.
Right.
But that's not what's happening, so we got to go with what we got. Anything else on the breakdown you want to talk about?
No, I just, you know, I hadn't really thought of that before, but, you know, just looking at that average, you know, it's just, I don't see how your standard non-chain comic shop is making ends meet. And it's like maybe, you know, back issues, but not all of them have back issues,
Hero
t-shirts,
clicks,
you know, t-shirts, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of them are getting
into
other things.
They're scraping by. You're not getting rich. You know?
But that's why even if you get your stuff through DCBS like Bob and I do, go support your local shop too. Because you want them to be around, you want them to be healthy, you want them to have the comics you didn't think to pre-order. You know, that's part of why, you know, any chance I get, I'm mentioning Tribe Comics, which is the local store by me. They do great stuff, and I mean, they're a fairly young store. They've been around a little over a year, I'm going to say a year, 4 or 5 months. And I mean, they're certainly not, I can't imagine they're raking in the money hand over fist or whatever, but they seem to be content with how they're doing, and you know. So I think it's possible to make a living, obviously, on comic retailing, even as a smaller shop. And there's some serious competition here in town with a couple of bigger stores. But, you know, if you know what you're doing and order wisely for what your particular store can sell, which is what the guys at Tribe are doing a good job at, you can do okay. But you're operating on such a thin margin that you can't say, well, gee, everyone seems to like this. I should order a ton. It's like, well, maybe your customer base doesn't like that. So, dangerous game to play, or not dangerous, but risky game to play if you don't play it well. So, these guys seem to be doing good at Tribe. Hopefully, everyone's local retailer is doing the same, but I've heard way too many stories of, yep, store's closing down. Gotta find somewhere new to get it. Top of the list this month, Blackest Night number 6. Excuse me. Blackest Night number 6 with 100,643 estimated units. That's down 32.29% from the previous issue. And I will note that that previous issue had that really cool green lantern ring. Or I suppose that's redundant. But the green lantern ring versus the other lantern rings that the other ones had. So I think that's part of why that dropped, but it's a little disheartening to see the top-selling book be a what is considered a widely successful crossover book and just barely getting over the 100,000 mark. You know, it's, I think the general buzz around Blackest Night is uniformly positive, and that I would have expected it to have stayed a bit higher above the 100,000 mark at this point.
Yeah. What was the first issue?
The first issue has accumulated up to 203,712 estimated units.
Yeah, that, I'm kind of surprised that there's such a big delta between issue 5 and issue 6. I'm curious as to why that is.
Well, again, they had to order units in groups of, I think it was 50 for Blackest Night to qualify for the rings.
Yeah.
So if you had 85, would you bump your order up to get another bag of rings? Would you not? And, you know, again, it depends on your customer base and how much you think you, I mean, if you're doing that to give them away, that's one thing. If you're doing that to charge $3.99 for them, that's another profit center there. But I do think that's factoring into the 48,000 unit drop from the previous issue.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Which, again, was higher than either issues 3 or 4.
I did make my way. We were talking on the previews call that Jeff Johns had got a part ownership in a comic book store up in the San Fernando Valley, and I wasn't aware of that. So I'm like, oh, so last weekend I drove up there,
mm-hmm.
And indeed, there's just a whole boatload of Jeff Johns comics that he's autographed on the cover, just laying around on the racks. You know, when Jeff owns the store, when he comes in, he just signs a bunch of comics. So there was like the variant cover second printing of Blackest Night number 1 that I bought with the Jeff Johns autograph on it, and, you know, picked up a couple other things from the novelty of the store. But, you know, I think on Blackest Night number 1, you know, coming out with the second and the multiple printings with the different covers, that helped buoy up sales on that too.
Oh yeah. And again, people have, you know, had 6 months to be picking that up, you know, and therefore stores can reorder, et cetera, versus again, initial month of release for this. Not to say I expect to see great reorder activity on this, but you know, it's possible. If we go towards the bottom of the list, we've got some reorder activity for the 5th issue of Blackest Night, the 1st issue of Blackest Night. I'm not seeing any other issues, but I'm willing to bet if the list had gone further down, we'd still see some serious reorder activity for some of those other issues. But again, disheartening, only one thing cracked the 100,000 mark.
Yeah, and just barely at that.
Yeah. So, I mean, to me, that indicates, regardless of the total sales, this was not a strong month. You know,
but you also had that skip week in the month.
We still had four weeks, though.
Yeah, that's true.
So it compares to let's talk about that for a second. If we had not had that skip week, in other words, if that truly was a skip week, this would have come out in January. The top item wouldn't even have cracked 100,000.
Right, because that was pretty much the only new comic out that week.
It was the only new, yeah. So,
I mean, there were a couple of variant covers and stuff, but it was the only all new.
So it's possible we'll see a little reorder activity just for that spilled over into the next month for that issue, but still, you know, kind of interesting. Next up in rank two, we've got Green Lantern 49 at DC with 97,287 units. That's off by about 3% from the previous issue, but still, you know, very good sales. And that's the kind of thing that if, you know, at one point, a couple of years back, somebody said, yeah, Green Lantern, it's going to be right around that 100,000 mark. Now, granted, it's got the event helping it up there, but still, it's doing well. And it's interesting that the next two titles are both Captain America Reborn titles, the first being Issue 5, the second being Who Will Wield the Shield. And big difference between those two. We got 91,783 units for that fifth issue of Who Will Wield the Shield, which is down almost 5% from the fourth issue. But then at 80,765 units is that Who Will Wield the Shield. And that's 11,000 unit difference. I would have figured Who Will Wield the Shield might have even done better than Cap Reborn for people who didn't want to invest in the 5 or 6 issue series.
I think in this specific instance, though, maybe there was some psychic power going on, because the actual reality of that issue was far less than, you know, it could have been.
Yeah, but it's one of those that the potential for this,
oh yeah,
I think was way higher than what was realized. So, and that's just unfortunate. Now, if we jump around a little to go through the other Power Ring issues, because I know you want to discuss this, and I think it'd be a good thing to do. Starting with the, we'll go in rainbow order, just to make sure we don't miss any. The yellow ring went with Doom Patrol number 4, and down at rank 56, we've got Doom Patrol number 5. It did 35,345 units. That's down 34.22%. This was still a Blackest Night crossover. It just didn't have the added benefit of the Power Ring. The Orange Ring went with Booster Gold number 26. We've got number 27 here, rank 47, which did 40,253 units. That's down 29.51% from the previous issue. Again, still a Blackest Night crossover, just no Power Ring. Then the Indigo Ring, Rebels 10 had the ring, Rebels 11 here is at rank 66 with 31,487 units, down 38.36%, still a Blackest Night crossover, and number 9 had been doing 11,275 units, so still 20,000 plus units above kind of where it had been. So we could see a very sharp drop again next month when it just goes back to being the regular title without any crossovers. Adventure Comics was the blue ring. And the colors on the blue and the indigo always throw me on this. But number 4 had the ring. Number 5 here is at rank 21. It did 59,871 units. That's down 29.66%. So I think we're seeing kind of
yeah, there's a pattern.
A pattern so here.
They're getting like somewhere between 15 and 20-ish thousand unit bump.
Well, they're losing about a third of their sales, roughly, right, from the previous issue.
Now, what was the issue before the ring? Now, it's like, did it go up by that and then back down?
How did previous issue of Adventure Comics to the Power Ring was 44,394. But again, Issue 5 continued the Blackest Night crossover. So we're still seeing an increase, but we're seeing a lot of it having been due to the ring or the first part of the crossover story versus just the crossover itself. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
The Violet one was Outsiders 24. We got Outsiders 25 down at rank 51 at 37,844. That's a drop of 32.04% from the previous issue, but still about 16,400 from the issue prior to the Power Ring. We already talk about Blackest Night, which had the green ring, and that leaves the red ring. Actually, I'm not doing this in rainbow order. I'm doing this in the order they were released. I'm sorry. I have a note card here reminding me of what was where. So, and then Justice League, and that was the one I forgot to highlight in my spreadsheet here. It's at row 11, or rank 11, sorry, row 13. So Justice League 40 did 68,667 estimated units. That's down only 23.14% from the issue that had the Power Ring, and up about, actually under 8,000 from the issue before the Power Ring. And what that's telling me is, as expected, the higher up you are on the charts going in, the less of the bump you get, because you already have some of the people who are going to want this anyways, but that on average you lose about a quarter to a third of your total sales on the issue after the ring. I expect to see another substantial drop on all of these, putting them back down towards the baseline of what they were doing before, after the Blackest Night crossover. So it makes sense to do these stunts, provided you only expect to get the benefit during that stunt.
And, you know, I think the bottom line is that the extra money they made on that one issue far exceeded, you know, like the cost of the rings to them, you know, and they might even have broke even on that with what they were charging the retailers for them. So it definitely paid off to DC.
Well, and I think it paid off to retailers too.
To retailers as well, because, I mean, they got a huge jump in. And again, I think it's more of on the retailer side. You know, I think that they got more increased sales. The increased sales they got offset the few dollars they had to pay for the rings, even if they were a good retailer, in my mind, and were giving away the rings as opposed to, you know, selling them for several dollars.
Yeah. Again, these things worked out to about 16 cents a ring. And, you know, Tribe here was giving them away. Other stores here in town were charging $3.99 for them, or $2.99, I guess, actually. But still, it's like, come on. I'm all for stores making a profit, but frankly, I've spent more at Tribe Comics the last couple of months than at the other store, and that trend will continue because of this.
Yeah, it pays a dividend, and it's just like, you know, Comics, Toons, and Toys that I always go to. They were giving the rings away with the purchase, and you know, they were not capitalizing on it to, you know, charge someone, you know, several dollars for those rings. And that's what, you know, I was already going there, but it makes me, you know, feel good in my decision to give them my, you know, 80 to 100 bucks I blow a month in the comic shop, because they're just a good retailer. They've got a good attitude, and, you know, that's what I like to see. Not someone who's trying to do that short-term capitalization on their customers.
Well, and I got to wonder how many stores have more rings than they could deal with and aren't making the money off it. And I think the value of those rings, as cool as I think they are, is gone down the minute they release the DC Direct solicits for February, where they've got those essentially the equivalent ring, but now it lights up.
Yep.
For sale, and I'm like, okay, that's cool. I know my interest in the regular rings has dropped since then, but that's just me. Again, I think what we're seeing here is exactly what we expected. Do the Power Ring stunt, it's going to shoot through the roof. Go back to a Blackest Night, you'll see a drop-off, but still well above average, because just Blackest Night itself is bumping titles up significantly. And then I expect that once we're on to regular issues, it'll be pretty much back down to how it would have trended otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see what else we've got that looks interesting. Fall of the Hulks Alpha started acceptably well at 62,780 units. The Gamma issue, however, did 46,879 units, so not quite as well. Ironically, I do think that's a reflection of what I perceive as story quality there. Back up a little, we've got Blackest Night Flash number 1 having cracked 80,000 with 80,307. It is interesting to note that the highest Marvel book, the Cap Reborn number 5 we talked about, failed to crack 92,000. Again, that's their ceiling for the month. Blackest Night Wonder Woman number 1 only did 70,753, I say only, in comparison to that Flash, that Blackest Night number 1 that did about 10,000 units better. And then Blackest Night JSA number 1 did 68,716. And I think that there's a strong contingent of people, you know, following and enjoying Blackest Night. Gee, no surprise. Siege Cabal did 68,650 units down at rank 12. That's with multiple covers. If you look at the top 10 items, everything but two had multiple covers. And ironically, the two that did not were New Avengers and Dark Avengers. And I think Marvel tends to be a little more alternate cover happy than DC. At some point, I expect that bubble to kind of burst and that the multiple covers are not really going to pan out for publishers how they have been.
It's just, there's so many of them. It's just...
There's too many. And any time you take any successful sales gimmick and just keep using it, you drive the power out of it.
I'm curious as to, especially since most shops increase the price. Well, I mean, there's two kinds of multiple covers, right?
There's variant covers and incentive covers. Variants are ones that are in kind of even distribution and it's an alternate cover. Incentive covers are the buy X and you qualify for one that you, I think, still have to buy in most cases.
Right.
And it'd be nice if they had that kind of delineated. They used to have the actual individual item codes, but they, about a year ago, switched to just doing a dash M for, yep, it had multiple covers. So I haven't compensated for that in my system to give me back visibility into, are these incentive or variants?
Yeah, because, I mean, there's a tremendous number of those things, you know, going on out there. And, I mean, even the 1 in 10s, like, for instance, the 1 in 10s at Comics, Toons, and Toys, they sell those for, like, a dollar over cover price. So, I mean, he doesn't put them out generally for straight cover price, but he's not one of these stores that sells them for 10 bucks either. So if it's a $2.99 book, you can get it for $4. If it's a $3.99 book, it's $5 or whatever, which makes it pretty handy because I get the Spider-Man ones.
Mm-hmm.
They've been pumping out zillions of them, so it's really not that expensive to get those. But, you know, a lot of stores, they still, I see them, you know, they're like $8, $10, you know, whatever dollars for these issues. And like when those Marvel Frame variants came out, I mean, those were not a 50-50 variant, right?
Right.
And they're going to be coming out now with the Women of Marvel ones with the Yurtovic covers, I think. And, you know, those, if they're like $10 or $15 a piece, I mean, you can talk, you know, some serious change each month just to pick up those variant covers or the incentive covers, you know, by that terminology.
But I think there are people out there that get a handful of comics, are really loyal and interested in those comics, huge fans of them, and find it really cool to be getting these incentive covers. And for me, it's something that I think is kind of backfiring on some of the publishers, and I do not consider myself a typical comic buyer. I know this. But, like, when I'll go to the San Diego Comic-Con, and I'm looking around at the increasingly few tables that have recent comics out, and I'm like, I know I have that issue, but I've never seen this set of covers, you know, for these issues. You know, they did that as far back as, like, the OMAC project and stuff like that, and there were some cool covers. But, you know, I don't really track that. I'm going for the content of the issue, not the, you know, 18 bazillion, you know, incentive covers they're doing. And it kind of rubs me the wrong way to to not feel I got the wrong cover, but I didn't get the coolest cover. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, you didn't get the one that you would have preferred.
Well, and I certainly wouldn't have paid the extra money for it either.
Right.
You know, and they're going towards the artificial collectability of comics as trading card type stuff versus what I feel should be, quote-unquote, the true collectability of comics of, is it a good story? Is it really legitimately rare? Or, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And it's, I feel it's counterproductive and one of the things that's leading towards weakening sales on titles. You know, when we used to routinely have a dozen or so titles up above 100,000. Now, granted, the economy's not as strong, etc. I'd argue these days the content is even stronger than it was a couple of years back. But we're not seeing those, and I think a lot of that money's been bled out of the system by the increased cover price, variant covers, incentive covers, other stunts, and that people are just a little, I don't say gun-shy, but you know what I mean.
Right. Well, I mean, that's the thing, though. I mean, it's like most people have a static amount of money that they can spend, right, in a given month. And this is what is maybe an unintentional backfire of these variant covers. I mean, sure, they're allowing the retailer, you know, some retailers to make a killing on selling some of these books for, you know, $10 or something like this. But if a person has a set amount of money to spend, and they spend $10 on a variant cover of whatever, you know, let's say Green Lantern, and I've seen some of the variant covers on the Green Lantern books going for $20 or more, you know, because they're like 1 in 25 or incentive covers, right?
Yeah.
You know, if somebody, just take a simple example, though, if somebody spends $10 on a variant cover of a book that they like, chances are that means they're a hardcore collector of that title, and they probably also bought the regular cover of that. So they already had the story, but they're paying another $10 for that variant cover. Now, if they have a static amount of money that they have allocated to spending on comics, they have now bought, they have spent $10 on that one comic that they already probably had. And if they had not done that, would they have taken that $10 and gone and bought three other comics, you know, that the publishers would have gotten, you know, money off of? So is it almost like even backfiring on the publishers? Because that's three units that didn't sell.
Well, it's always hard to convince somebody that they lost potential sales and are losing money because of it. Versus the, well, I got the $10 for the variant cover, which cost me one page of art.
Right, but I mean, I'm talking about the publisher.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Because the publisher is not getting the $10.
They're getting it by...
Although I guess they're getting it by selling more copies of the regular issue.
Exactly. So. But it's short-sighted because while they get it on that issue, and again, as cool as I think these power rings are, they did a bump for a single issue. We've already lost noticeable sales. So, you know, once we get back to the baseline after it, did it really pan out for them or not? Short term, most certainly. There's no question about that. But I think they are better off getting people onto a book and being able to keep them on the book. If I have $10, you're better off on me spending that on three different books that I like and will continue following than on one book with a variant cover, because maybe next month it doesn't have that incentive cover for me to go buy at $10. And, well, gee, you know, those other titles have started. I don't need to pick them up. But, I mean, they kind of get around that with just the number of number one issues and crap we get every month.
Well, I think the thing is that someone who's really into collecting the variant covers, there's plenty of variant covers out there that they'll probably just buy some other $10 variant the next month. And
well, it depends if they're doing it for variants or because they like a particular title, you know. And, again, I'd like to see the sales spread out across as many titles as practical and have all of them be strong versus the, well, Hulk selling, let's do 15 Hulk books this month or what have you.
Right.
I feel they're cannibalizing their market. And, you know, we get to below 50,000 units by the time we hit rank 30 this month. You know, we hit below 25,000 units by the time we hit rank 84, and then, you know, we quickly get, you know, into the how is this title still being published by Marvel and DC pretty quick.
Right.
But, I mean, we've got a number of titles set in the mainstream DC universe that are under 10,000 units. The Web is down at 6,653. The Shield at 7,315. Great Ten at 8,759. Warlord at 9,101. Magog at 10,699. Red Tornado at 11,009. Jonah Hex, special case, but still set in the DC Universe, kind of, sort of, 15,130. Green Arrow Black Canary, 16,903. Azrael, 17,756. Arkham Reborn, at 19,579. Heck, Brave and the Bold is just barely above 20,000 with 20,930 units. So we've got a lot that are either clearly in or past below what I would consider the danger zone. And then a couple that are very mainstream books that are not selling where I think they could be and should be based on, you know, the popularity of some of these characters. And, I mean, just how few, I don't say how few comic fans are there, but you know what I mean. It just seems like something like Green Arrow Black Canary selling under 17,000 units, I find that hard to see as anything but a sign of either there are too many comics or comics are too expensive or I don't know what, but it's... something's not working.
Right. I'm kind of curious as to, you know, is DC... well, I mean, DC seems to do this a little better than Marvel. You know, or are they just, in some of these cases, like riding them out until they get a trade paperback worth and then they're going to, you know, pull the plug, although, you know, you never know. I was surprised to see a 13th issue of Warlord solicited, you know, given what it's selling.
Well, I mean, you look at Great Ten number 2 that dropped a third, 33.42% to be exact, between the first and second issue. That's the equivalent of a second and third issue drop combined. So this is not a good sign. And it started at 13,155 units, which to me clearly a danger zone area. And this is part one of 10. That's... I don't see how it's going to be viable by that 10th issue. DC,
right.
However,
but that's the thing, though. If they define a 10-issue story arc, they seem a lot more likely to let that thing ride out to the conclusion of
agreed.
The story, like with the Mighty, for instance, than Marvel tends to.
I agree with that by and large. There are a few notable counterexamples, but very few. So in DC's defense, it's most likely going to... I would be surprised if the Great Ten does not complete its run. I think the odds are very strong that it will. But the handful of people besides me that care about that, I don't know. You know, how big that group's going to be.
Yeah.
I mean, are you still getting it?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I like the Great Ten.
I just couldn't remember.
I think it's a good, great series. I'm really a fan of Tony Bedard, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he's telling a good story there. I mean, he's doing Rebels too. I mean, he does a good job on that stuff.
The one I'm going to be sorry to see go away and hope it will not, but almost can't see how it can't, is The Web. Issue 4 again, the 6,653 units. That's down another 12% from issue 3. This title started at 15,495, which I see as... I almost say I want to see. I see this as a credit to the DC sales and marketing team, facetiously. But if the best interest they can generate is on a new title, 15,500 units, that's not much. that's not much, and I can't blame the creative team. People hadn't seen the book at that point. You know, so where does the responsibility lie is what it comes down to, and it almost has to be with the marketing team. It was not promoted well, not to say they could promote everything, but it's already bled off you know, well over half its reader. I mean, almost two-thirds of its readers, because it's down by almost 10,000 units, you know. So if this gets past issue 6, I think that's questionable, although I'm not sure if 7th was solicited in the previews for February or not. But it's just, it's a great book, and nobody's buying it.
Well, yeah, a lot of people are not getting the opportunity to buy it, is what, and the other thing is, you know, even if stores did buy it, you know, would those people be busy, buying variant covers of some other book that they do collect and, you know, thus not have money to buy it anyway?
They do have a 7th issue solicited in the February previews, by the way. So it's sticking around for a little bit, but, and part of it is, do they get the opportunity or not to buy it? Certainly, that's why I fault the marketing team, because they didn't get this, they didn't get enough copies into stores to give it a decent shot. Flip side, I don't blame the retailers, because if they didn't think it would sell, they shouldn't order more, but that first issue sets something of a glass ceiling that few titles ever shatter. Although a couple definitely have, again, Walking Dead being a go-to example on that. But, you know, when the typical sales trend is to drop by about 22% and then by another 11 or whatever and just attrition from there, you know, if you don't start healthy, again, the example lately of Marvel is The Sword, or not The Sword, but Sword over at Marvel, which, you know, is ending with the 5th issue. Its second issue did 15,112 units, this going back towards your point of Marvel being quicker to pull the plug than DC. That first issue did 21,981 units. So, again, 31.25% drop between those issues. DC would definitely have let this ride for a bit longer. That's not to say they would have had it continue as an ongoing, though.
And you can't fault Marvel, I mean, because you get right down to it. Marvel's a business, as is DC, but, I mean, Marvel's making business decisions, you know. But
was it the right business decision to solicit that as an ongoing to begin with, or would it have been smarter to test the waters?
Very, very good point. I think that, you know, they just kind of like, let's shoot some stuff out there and see what happens, you know, kind of mentality.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's a damned if they do, damned if they don't kind of a thing. If it goes as a miniseries and they relaunch and stuff, we give them a hard time for that. If they do it as an ongoing and it trickles out, we give them a hard time for that. But, you know, and I don't want to be slamming them no matter what they do, because that's certainly not my intent. But it seems ironic that they toss some stuff out there as ongoings that, to me, seem like tough sells, Sword being one of them.
Did you stick with that after the first issue? I know we reviewed the first issue and I dropped it.
Yeah, I did. I like aspects of it. It's got a kind of a Doctor Who vibe to it in places. And if you can ignore the fact that the Beast is completely incorrectly drawn, it's a decent quote.
That was the stopper for me. It's interesting that Kieran Gillen on his blog actually made mention of that fact, that the Beast was completely off model, but...
To me, that's just unacceptable. If you got somebody who's got their own style, like Strange that we reviewed on the Weekly Comic Spotlight, you know, a style you don't feel fits a mainstream Marvel book, I respect that, but at least the characters were correctly drawn in that style.
Right.
Versus, I don't care what style it is, the Beast just doesn't look like that.
Well, you know, the thing is, though, is I don't fault the creative team. I fault the lack of editorial art direction, because realistically, someone in editorial should be asking for roughs, and when they see a page with that, they should like, no, redraw that. You know, that's editorial's fault.
I think it does come down to editorial, but I do still blame the artist. You know, it's like, have you not read any of the X-Men books?
Well, you know, the artist is maybe trying to do something interesting and of their own, and it's up to the people who own those characters to tell them no. You know, it's...
Fair enough. I guess to me it's so far off model that they're redesigning the character, and I don't know that makes sense to do in that book. But
no, true.
You know, the other thing that's ironic is we had, I think, the last issue of War Machine, number 12, which did 17,571 units. And that seems like another one they should have kept around for, you know, another arc or whatever to tie into the upcoming movie where War Machine's going to show up.
Oh, they're certainly putting out, like, 8 or 10 different Iron Man books as well as a Black Widow ongoing to tie into that movie. So it is kind of interesting in that respect.
Yeah, well, and hopefully we'll see that kind of pan out. You know, I realistically do not believe we will. It just doesn't happen. I mean, Invincible Iron Man is at rank 34 with issue number 21. It did 47,326 units. It's down 23.23% from the previous issue, which was a huge spike up. This is actually right around how issue 19 had done, and is down from the 120,618 that the title started at. But to be fair, it lost quite a bit of that with the second issue, where it was already down to 75,973 units, quickly settling into the 55,000 to 60,000 range it's been at almost ever since, with the last five issues or so dropping below the 50,000 mark, getting more towards the 57,000, 58,000 range. But that's another example where, back when that first Iron Man movie came out, if everyone who bought that DVD that first weekend, you know, if one half of 1% of those people, I should say, not everyone, but even a tiny, tiny fraction of that, bought the next issue of Iron Man, it would have doubled in sales. Because that DVD did like 7 million units that first weekend.
Yeah.
So, big potential audience out there, folks.
But I bought that DVD in the first weekend, and there was zero indication in that DVD that there even existed a comic book for someone to go buy.
Yeah.
And I think we mentioned that back when it occurred.
But it's worth mentioning again to where they can try not to repeat the mistake with the second movie. Let's see, what else do we got that's interesting in here? JSA All-Stars is at rank 42 with 42,490 estimated units, which outsold JSA number 34 down at rank 45 with 41,731 units. I actually would have expected the ordering to be reversed. Overall, we got a lot of stuff in kind of the usual places. The second issue to come out of Deadpool Team-Up, which was 898 compared to 899, dropped by 8.25%. That's actually a very minor second issue drop, because that one started at 899, right? Yeah. So that's a good sign for that.
Oh, I guess that came, that was kind of like the follow-on, though, to Deadpool 900, I guess.
I kind of count that as part of the Deadpool series, but yeah, it was neither.
It's kind of like the numbering child of Deadpool 900, though, because it came out 899 and it's going backwards.
But I consider 899 to be kind of the benchmark first issue for this sales trend, if you will.
Right.
Angel got a bump up in sales with issue 28 that we reviewed at rank 103. Only bumped up by about 2.75%, a little over that. So, you know, not a big bump for the new creative team. But didn't go down, so that's good too. We already got down at the bottom. There's usually some interesting titles there. Elephant Man number 23 is down at 298 with 3,461 units. That's almost exactly on par with the previous issue. It's off by roughly a dozen units. That's enough that it's worth reminding people these are estimates, not exact sales figures. They're usually going to be pretty close, but sometimes the noise between months can make that be, you know. In other words, this could have exactly matched, or it could just be a hair lower by as little as 2 or 3 units, potentially, just because of rounding issues. We've got a couple of reorders. The Blackest Night we talked about. Got some of the Boom stuff down here with their Monsters, Inc. stuff. Donald Duck and Friends. Mickey Mouse and Friends. Where is Uncle Scrooge? That's the title I've stuck with. It's at rank 271, issue 386. It did 4,946 units. That's a drop of 5.43%, which is not bad at all. Continuing, you know, this is interesting. I pulled up the history on this, thinking we'd only get an issue or two, but really we go back to 2003 on this title because it jumped publishers and stuff, but had the consecutive numbering. And back in mid 2003, around the June July time frame, this was doing around 7,000 or 6,400 units, depending, at a $695 price point. So it was bringing in between $45,000 and $49,000. Now it's at a smaller price point at $299, therefore bringing in significantly less, and the sales are, at this point, right around 5,000, we'll say. But it's actually doing better than it had during, you know, say 2007, 2006, 2005, and stuff. At a, of course, it was a $695 price point then too. Then went to $750. While Boom is making less money per issue than the previous publisher had done, I think they are making the correct decision to have it at the lower price point and get it into more hands, or make it more palatable to get into more hands.
Well, I think it's getting into the hands of kids now. That's probably part of the bump, because at $695 an issue, I'm not sure who was buying it, but I can't think. I mean, I had little kids. They're grown pretty much now, but there's no way I would have given a, you know, $7 comic book to a 5-year-old.
Well, 382 was $7.99.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, that's just $8. Forget it.
And I like Uncle Scrooge, but even at that, I was pretty much not getting those either. You know, it's like, really? You know?
Mm-hmm. Definitely good stuff. And again, getting it accessible to where it's able to get into the hands of kids, a good thing. Found the Mighty, it was down at 262, with issue 11 at 5,500 units.
Yeah, so that's getting way down there.
No surprise that one is
easy. Although the bottom of the list is quite a bit higher than we've seen in some months.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. It is 3,403 units, and the average for the year, I think, has been around 2,931 units, with it having gotten as low as 1,612 units and as high as 4,095 units.
I will say, though, the power of Marvel. I mean, look at the reorders on Dark Reign, the List, Punisher. That is in the, if not the worst Punisher story I've ever read in my life, at least in the top 10. And I like the Punisher, you know.
Well, this is where different people have different opinions. I am not going to disagree with you at all. However, I just listened to one of the recent episodes of 11 O'Clock Comics, where they were doing the 11 O'Closkers and their year-end awards. And some of the stuff they were saying about the Punisher, this particular issue and stuff, they may have been the ones buying all these copies, for all I know.
Well, you got to understand, they drink heavily, and they're all...
I wasn't going to say that.
Three sheets to the wind when they're recording, so maybe that accounts for the fact that they actually like Frankencastle.
I can only assume they're that way when they're reading as well. But hey, different tastes, different people, yeah, that's great. I respect that.
Awful, awful stuff.
Yeah, no, that one really turned me off.
You know, our tastes on the pun, even yours and mine, I mean, because to me, that Punisher Max series that's running, that's one of the best Punisher things that's come out pretty much ever. You know, but you wouldn't. It's not suitable for you.
Yeah, well, the exact reason I would avoid it is because it's one of the best Punisher stories ever, you know.
Exactly, but, you know.
I'm squeamish, I know this.
It's just the taste, but, you know, that, but I think that's the thing, maybe. And some people, I think, can like both, but for me, it's like, this is so much the antithesis of the Punisher that I like. It's just, you know, yikes.
Yeah. Well, there's just a variety of tastes out there, and that's why, you know, I encourage retailers to always look at what they can sell to their customers.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, on that Uncle Scrooge and stuff, one thing that you do want to keep into account on any of those Disney ones is that Boom has those alternate distribution channels for its kid comics. So more so than a lot of comics on here, I think there are tons of sales that are happening to Boom that are not being reflected in the Diamond numbers.
And ones that probably weren't happening for the previous publisher
That's exactly right. There's no way Gemstone was getting, the Disney theme parks, the
mass Disney
market
stores,
and Disney stores and all these kind of places. You know, I've got to imagine, see a $2.99 Mickey Mouse or Uncle Scrooge comic, if I'm at the Disney store and my kid sees that and they want it, I'd buy it for them. If I'm at the Disney theme park and we're in the store and they want to read that comic while we're standing in line or something, I'd be buying it for them, you know. And, you know, that there's got to be sales happening there that's making those books very successful for them that we're totally not seeing on these lists.
Well, and I'm hoping that they're doing subscription stuff such that they'll have the statement of ownership in there in a year's time, and that we'll see how that's been doing outside the direct market, because that would give us some of that visibility.
Right.
So overall, top of the chart, not where I'd like it to be. We had... Let's see, 64 issues. My system couldn't find a previous issue for. It's not like I'm looking by hand. Geez, 211 sold less than the previous issue found, and 19 sold more than the previous issue found. So again, most titles not doing well. The total losses on an issue to issue basis was over $500,000. The total gains was a little under 28,000 units. That netted out to a difference of 481,634 units net loss on an issue-to-issue basis. This is not month-to-month. And includes multiple issues of a title in this set as well. In other words, things like Amazing Spider-Man are showing up or adding to both sides of the total net total loss. Average loss on an issue-to-issue basis, 2,414 units. Average gain, 1,460 units. So not only is a title statistically more likely to lose readers than gain it, it's going to lose more than it would gain. We had 43 number one issues this month. We had... This actually is really interesting. If you look at the breakdown of the prices, we've got... 42% of the items on the list at the $2.99 price point and 41% at the $3.99 price point, a difference of only 3 items. Again, this is including both new and reorder items. So we're at the tipping point almost where the $3.99 is going to be, you know, on par with the number of $2.99 items, which is unfortunate. We had 17 items at $3.50, 13 items at $4.99. That is another 10% of the list. So just those four price points accounts for 93% of the items on the list.
You know, it would be a good and interesting thing that you could probably calculate on the $2.99 versus $3.99 is based on units sold, what is the average location on the list or something like that? Or even just based on where it's coming in or something. You know, it's like, so, you know, I know Marvel, you know, hits a lot of these $3.99 miniseries that might sell a little less than some of the bigger ones. But then, you know, on the other hand, they've got a lot of their really popular titles at the really high price points. You know, so maybe that averages out for them. But be interesting in general, you know, how relatively strong the $3.99 versus $2.99 books are doing.
I'll give that some thought, and I agree that would be fascinating to put in, kind of how these things break down in terms, again, average position on the list, average sales, average income, that sort of thing. I will give that some thought. Again, I'm at the point where I want to be restructuring this. I haven't had quite the time to work on it. I'd like to, but I'm probably going to for the 2010 stuff, if I can get my act together, start sending potentially two files, kind of the existing one and the replacement that will get built up over time, just to be being able to have a better place to be adding some of that stuff, like you were just talking about. So if any of the listeners have information they would like to see included, such as the averages on the breakdown that 80s Junkie suggested, and thank you for doing that, please post on the forum, send me an email, let me know. I want this information to be as useful as possible to people. I just enjoy, you know, crunching the numbers on this and seeing how things stand. Total units sold, 6,305,530 units. So, we've had better months, we've had worse months. This was just a hair above average. So, the fact that the bottom of the list was doing really well versus the top of the list not so much, you know, I found interesting. Anything else, or does that pretty much do it?
I think that'll do it for us.
Cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If you differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there is at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust it needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50, 25, or as few as 10 items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the alternate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and English language itself seem to work very differently there.